This is the June 3 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Ellen Dearden of AgReview. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. And you can also search it out as a podcast in your favorite podcast applications. We'll start today with Jim McCormick. I wanted to know from him about his background, his bio, how he started in the industry, how long he's been here, and then we move on from there.
I'll start where I came out of here, Todd, by graduating from Purdue University way back in 1994 as an ag business management major. I went to work for Central Soy as a grain buyer for a little around a year, roughly. After that, I found my way in the brokerage business, and I have been a commodity broker now for 25 years.
And so you've been a commodity broker for quite some time prior to a lot of the black box trade that is currently taking place, that which is computer driven, even if it's money managed sometimes, is automatic. I'd like to discuss the psychology of the trade. Oftentimes, brokers would talk about this early on in my career because everybody tends to move together sometimes, and it does push the trade. For instance, the trend is your friend, those sorts of things. Has that changed over the decades?
Yes, Todd, it's really changed dramatically. When I started business, the pits were still in play. You know, when we talked to our customers, which pretty much traditionally be your farmers for the most part, that's who our base has always been. We'd take an order from the customer, we'd call the floor, place the order, wait for the order to get hit, come back, and then call the customer. And it might be, 5, 10, 15 minutes on really busy days before you could kind of get that whole cycle done. Now you're to the point where everything is done electronically. Now when a customer gives us the orders, we place the order onto a computer system. It's an instantaneous fill. But in the meantime, between that, what's going on as the brokers kind of got away from the pit, Todd, and got more and more into computerized trading, it's taken over the trade. Some estimates say those trades are 80 to 85, as much as 90% of a day's trade. So what happens now is you get instantaneous fills, but you also get instantaneous reactions. A lot of people do not realize that is the computer AI programs are so smart right now, they're literally reading the headlines. So when we get the report, you might notice how the market moves instantaneously, even before my eyes can even open up the report for the file, we've already traded it because the computers are that fast. So how that's changed the way we encourage producers to hedge and trade is you got to have your orders and your points where you want to buy and where you want to sell working. The days of, hey, Mr. Broker, if it hits a certain price, if December corn gets up to $7, give me a call today. I tell my customers, Todd, if you want to sell $7 corn, have that order working. If you want to have that $7 HTA or cash price at your elevator, you got to have it working because that's the biggest thing difference with these black box tradings. It is so fast and so quick, the market can move up and then move back down before you even have a chance to even comprehend what's going on.
Let's talk a little bit more about that at this point. And I'll make note here that producers need to have as much contact with you, I think that's what you're telling me, as they have before. But the contact is just a little bit different. And it's more, quote, future oriented because the things need to be already in place. Let's talk about report days. We have one coming up for the month of June, WASDE. It's not a big one, a second one at the end of the month. The acreage and the grain stocks numbers are due out. Those both will be big figures. And when those reports come out, as you said, the AIs, the black boxes, are able to read the headlines and the market jumps dramatically. However, the push then comes, I think, from the brokerage and cash basis side to move the market back into some sort of balance. Am I correct about that? Because this happens so quickly, there'll be pops and then they simply disappear.
Well, that's it. The computers are going to try to front run the orders. They get that instantaneous order. they trade it. And then what will happen is more the humans, the traders, the farmers, as that report gets disseminated, then they'll make their decisions on how they react to it. Let's just say we happen to get a bullish report. Not saying I don't know if we're going to get one or not next week, Todd, but say we get a bullish report and the market surges higher. Then the producers out there are going to get that on their phone. They're going to see it. They might get a text saying, hey, corn rallied 30, 35 cents. Then that farmer's going to call, maybe call his broker, call his cash guy, say, hey, crop's looking good. I want to reward the market. Then you might start seeing the commercial sector move in. You know, my personal opinion, I'd like to see it. Like I kind of enjoyed it back in the good old days, as I like to age myself, is when you got your report at 7:30 in the morning. You had a couple hours to decide how you were going to react to the report, maybe what you kind of hedges or risk off, risk on you wanted to do. Then the market would open at 9:30. I would love for the CME group to essentially, in the government, in essence, to change the time of the report. Instead of releasing at 11 o'clock Chicago time, release it at 8 o'clock. Why not release it while the market is in pause and give everybody about a half an hour to make those adjustments? Because that's the one thing so frustrating, I think, to a lot of producers, is the computers are really getting ahead of the farmer because they just have the faster system. And I don't know if that's fair, but that's what's going on.
They believe you'd have to regulate the CME group so that they wouldn't move to trade around it. USDA, as you recall, kept moving the times for those releases, and CME group just kept chasing the times at some point. So I don't know whether that would be possible, but it is something that probably needs to be discussed at the congressional level, I would think. And farmers and brokers and others probably can put enough pressure on Washington, D.C. to consider what might happen with that. I'd have one other question before we get to really the markets in general. Did you see the Citigroup in the month of May lost nearly $50 million because of fat finger error? That's what it's called when, in this case, they added an additional zero to an order that they put in. And I think it caused something like $300 billion in losses before it was figured out. It moved quickly. That's something else that happens in this trade. And I don't know whether it was something you had to worry so much about when you were actually calling the pits, but maybe you can tell me about that too.
Well, you always had the air risk in the pit. I mean, there was a different situation. When you had the pit, you get a phone. Usually you phone the order in, and there was actually a process to it. If I was going to place an order, Todd, and you were the order taker, I would give you the order. I'd say I want to buy 5 D's corn at 690. Then you'd repeat back the order. We're buying 5 D's corn at 690. Then I'd confirm it. Yes, I would confirm it. There were errors. I know I had errors. The problem with the computer systems, it's so fast. The pressure is moving so fast. Remember back then, you had, what was the corn range? 12 cents was a limit move. You know, bean limit moves are 15, 20 cents. Now you got bean moves over a dollar. The market's moving so fast, the brokers essentially are in a hurry. And sometimes you got to slow yourself down, but the markets move so fast. And, you know, if you just have a very quick typing error, and that's usually what happens, is someone just hits the one decimal off. And if and I want to say it's careless, but usually it's just an accident, but it can have a huge impact because of the movements. And that's also, I think, part of what's going on to the wide ranges we're seeing, Todd, I believe, in a way corresponds to the electronic black box trading situation. You got to remember, the CME Group is a for-profit company now. They make money. You can buy on their stock. So they want to keep that trade volume going. So the wider the ranges you have, the daily limits, the more tradings you can get done, the more trading, the wider limits also allow those black boxes to trade each other a little bit more ranges. So, I mean, the good news is you get some big moves that you may not have if you didn't have the black box trading, but it also adds a lot of volatility to it, which adds a lot of risk as well.
Now, speaking of volatility and risk, this has been an interesting week where the markets have moved more this week than they have in recent weeks, not more than they did certainly in this year, of course. However, I'm wondering how you see this marketplace for corn, soybeans, and wheat.
Well, right now, this week's been a kind of an interesting week. There's been two dynamics that have been driving the move this week, Todd. The first one, no doubt about it, is this story of will Putin or will he not come up with a way to allow the Ukrainians to get up to 20, 25 million metric tons of grain that's in their ports, some of it's loaded on ships already, out to the world that needs it right now. We've heard him say, hey, he's willing to open up these corridors. And then, you know, then all of a sudden you get this comment says, yeah, but I want something in return. And then you hear what he's going to do it. this week it felt like it took a little bit of risk off in the corn and wheat as there's a little bit more optimism. Maybe something's going to get done. Turkey has kind of stepped up and said, hey, I'll be the middleman. We're going to do it. But there's some questions I have. You know, are the Ukrainians, which have mined their ports as a way to defend themselves from the Russians, are they really going to feel comfortable opening up all those ports, which in essence would allow the Russians really good access to those ports? That's one. The other situation, just plain and simple, do you trust the Turks? Why do I say that? Russia stole a bunch of Ukrainian wheat, and guess who they sold it to? Turkey. So, I mean, if you're the Ukrainians, you got to wonder, do you really trust the Turks to be a kind of a neutral arbitrator? So we'll see what happens. My personal opinion for what it is, I don't think a deal is going to get done. This will they not kind of reminds me what happened in January into February when Putin was piling all those troops on the border. You kept hearing, oh, he's not going to invade. He said he wasn't going to invade. A lot of world leaders went over, talked to Putin. Putin told him he wasn't going to invade. They said, hey, he's not going to invade. And he invaded. Now it's kind of a deja vu in the fact that now the world keeps saying, no, he's going to let this grain out. And I don't see him doing that without some kind of a quid pro quo. And I just don't know if the world's going to give him that. We'll see. The market's definitely reacting a little bit to it. That's why the corn and wheat's down. Now, the one thing might be interesting, notice the beans have been trading higher. The reason why that's going on is there was a big trade that the New York money put on earlier this spring. They were buying two corn contracts, Todd, and they were selling one bean contract, kind of a 2-to-1 ratio play. And they really got aggressive putting that trade on earlier this spring. With we're getting in kind of a mild weather pattern right now, there's no major heat in the forecast. You've got this Ukrainian story. That seems to have caused a lot of that trade to be unwound. We saw it aggressively yesterday. We saw it late Thursday a week ago. We saw it a couple different times. So as they were getting out of that trade, that is pushing the corn market down, and that's pulling the bean market up as they get out of those short bean markets. And what you see is once they kind of quit unwinding that spread, then the bean market starts pulling back down. So I don't know if I really trust this bean rally. It's probably an opportunity to get some beans laid off risk, both new crop and old crop, because, like I said, I think a lot of this is driven by the unwinding of the spread more than anything else.
Jim McCormick is with AgMarket.net. His office is in Barrington, Illinois. Ellen Dearden is with AgriFuel. She's in Morton, Illinois, near Peoria. I wanted to know from her about the fundamentals of the soybean market. And first, we decided to talk about what conditions look like on the ground for soybean and corn around central Illinois.
First of all, everything is planted and has been planted for, I'd say, a good week, maybe a little more. Most of this area planted beans first and corn second. So the beans are through the ground. A lot of no-till beans in this area, so they always look a little rough when they're coming through. The corn is really excellent stands, I would say. Noteworthy that there's excellent stands. We've had rain in the last, since planting has been completed. And so the moisture situation is pretty good. I did see this morning a couple guys going out with sprayers, and I'm not sure what that was all about, but they were in beans. And so I would say in the Peoria area that the crop is in really good shape and the stands are really good in corn.
Let's talk about the fundamentals on the ground as well. In the area, you're along the Illinois River, some terminals there, ethanol plants there as well. Are they trying desperately to get hold of crop at this point?
Well, we see one of the large ethanol plants in this area in Pekin with some really huge premium basis at 53 over the July for spot delivery. Now, new crop isn't that good at all. We're in a situation where the old ADM plant, which is Bioyurgia, had a fire about 10 days ago. And so they're out of the market right now. And typically when that happens, we see basis fall apart. But obviously at 53 over, the basis has not fallen apart. This has really turned into a big processor margin. Not a lot of corn goes down the river anymore. If we want to go to a corn processor, we're going to Decatur with that. And they've had a hot basis all along. We do not see lines in this area, maybe half a day or something like that, you'll see a line. But I'm picking up that the further west you go on the Mississippi River, at Roquette in Keokuk, Iowa, have had just horrendously long lines. On the bean side of things, I don't think there's many beans still around to move. Again, premium basis gone to processors in either in Decatur or in Bloomington. Those markets have been robust. And yes, the premium basis has attracted some buying. And I think now that guys see their crop up and going, they're probably interested in letting go of those gambling bushels they've been holding. My guess is there's not many beans in the country to move, and the corn that's moving, a lot of that's hedged corns too.
Well, I have some questions about the Illinois River versus the Mississippi River. So why do you think producers in your area are not as willing, apparently, to let go of old crop corn supplies? Is it simply that they're waiting for a midsummer jump, potentially on weather? And what is it that has caused those that are along the Mississippi River in that Keokuk, Iowa area to think that they probably ought to move? Do you have any idea?
I think it's just a factor of seeing this new crop up and coming, and the fact that we've seen good basis on the corn side of things and excellent basis on the bean side of things has probably moved some of this hedged business.
When you think about the marketplace as a whole, fundamentally, livestock underpins about a third, maybe a bit more, of the corn market. Is livestock in jeopardy at the high price that it's been priced at the grocery shelf, and will consumers continue to call for meat?
If their consumers are like me, yeah, that we're going to continue to eat meat. It just seems to me that there's a real pull on the consumer dollars right now, not just at the grocery store, but also at the gas pump. And this $5 a gallon gas this week, I think, has really caught a lot of attention. I do see people at the grocery store mulling whether they should buy ground beef or not. It used to be that they'd look at steaks and say, well, maybe yes, maybe no. But now they're looking at ground beef, and that's kind of a tipping point. But keep in mind that chicken prices have risen as well. So the poultry that was always much cheaper than beef, that spread seems to have narrowed some. And right now we're not seeing a lot of featuring in pork. And that was the case in the first and second quarters, but those pork features have gone the wayside. So I'm not sure, you know, I have a freezer full of beef, so I eat beef almost every day, but I'm not sure what Joe Blow, the regular consumer's doing right now, because I think that they are very hesitant to spend more money at the grocery store than what they've been spending.
Chicken doesn't seem exactly like it's the same supply, or poultry doesn't. It's a supply chain issue as potentially the others, meaning just lots of higher priced inputs. Poultry, as USDA warned earlier in the year, has been worried about avian flu. I've not really seen avian influenza listed across the nation, but it must be at this point for chicken to be really beginning to jump, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it really has. And if you talk to some of the big egg layers in the Minnesota, Iowa area, they've culled millions of chickens. So yeah, I think we're seeing some of that avian flu you know, work its way into the food chain. People are a little hesitant. They hear a disease too, and they may be a little more hesitant to pick up a package of chicken.
Yeah, so avian influenza came in early. I believe it was USDA held a press conference almost devoted to this entirely. It was just before Easter. Worried about eggs at that point, but said that later in the year probably was going to be really pretty difficult for the poultry industry, and we're beginning to see some of that now. And we'll probably continue to see it all the way through the fall time frame, I would think. Now, turn your attention back to ethanol just a bit for me. Do you think ethanol usage will be suffering in the future because of these $5 gas prices?
It depends on whether guys decide that they're going to take that trip to Wisconsin Dells for the weekend or go to St. Louis for the weekend. I don't see my group of friends cutting back on driving yet. They may talk about it, but they're not cutting back on driving yet. So who is? I'm not sure what that group configuration would look like.
Inflation still playing a role?
Huge role. I mean, every headline that you see talks about inflation and how inflation's here to stay. And I thought this week when Treasury Secretary Yellen said that, they missed it and that this transitory, that they thought that inflation was just transitory, that they just got that wrong. And I think it was a good thing for the federal government to acknowledge that that was a wrong thing and now how to tame it. So, I don't know how quick the Fed can raise rates to tame inflation. It seems to me it's kind of a hard tightrope to walk.
And finally, your thoughts on marketing with livestock and corn, soybeans, and wheat.
Well, we had a huge surge in feeder cattle prices this week, and I think that was a function of a pullback in the grain market. But it says to me that the amount of calves that are out there available for movement into feedlots has really dropped, and I think the whole super culling of cow numbers over the last 6 months' time has really caught some attention. These feeder cattle look poised to me to stay in this 180s range without any difficulty. We got nearby feeders up in that 174-ish range this week, but I think we've got more upside to come there. The fat cattle are going to be lagging. Packers are really feel like they are in control and want to keep prices below this 140 for Fed prices, cash prices. And now that we've got the June live cattle at 133-ish, that's a discount to this cash market at 140. But we saw a lot of cash move at 135 to 137 this week, and that is not a good thing. The hog market, though, has had some nice rebounds off really low prices in the June, July, August down in that 102, 103 range. And we easily moved back to 110 without much kind of new information. I did notice that the hog price in China has really moved up. So that's probably a good thing for the market in the U.S. The high feed costs, historically speaking, have equated to higher live cattle prices and higher hog prices, and the cattle have been very hesitant to stay very, quote, high if 140 is high. Meal has been all over the place. I mean, we dropped like a rock when we got up in that 430 range. We're down in the 410 range now on meal. Pretty hard to continue to see strong crush like we've been seeing without the meal going along for the ride. Bean oils rebounded, made a new high for the year this past week. But meal has to do some of the lifting to get the beans moving back higher. Beans look like they're really kind of a drag on the market right now. We've seen a tremendous amount of spreading. And on Friday, as we speak, it's selling beans against buying corn, and corn is only up a penny or so. Just really really timid in this, on rallies, the corn market is. And the beans look like every time November beans get up around 1540, 1550, they fall apart. So I'm in the camp that I'm selling new crop, I'm selling old crop, I'm selling beans and corn at these current levels. Really, I'm not what I would call super active, but I sure am looking for more downside to come. Wheat's going to be a drag on things. Wheat put in a top, put in a double top, then put in a double bottom, and looks like it's headed down under that double bottom.
Ellen Dearden is with AgriView. She is in Morton, Illinois. Brian Stark is with the Andersons. He's based in Mansfield, Illinois, a lot closer here to East Central Illinois. Thank you, Brian, for taking your time with us today. Ellen and Jim, both sellers of grains, oil seeds, and corn, although I take it you have a contrarian view to that.
I certainly respect Ellen and Jim's opinion. I could, you know, maybe side a little easier with selling today versus new. I think there's a lot of unknown questions. And I think let's start with soybeans first. If you look at the export demand that we have seen happen through the first 7 months of the crop year, right here in East Central Illinois, the CN corridor that pulls a lot of beans from this area down to the Gulf has been significantly depleted. And I think as you move to the east into Indiana, into the other area I manage around West Central Indiana, our Clymers, Indiana ethanol facility, as well as our Delphi, Indiana grain mill, they're just east of Lafayette. Both those areas are significantly deficit soybeans right now. And I think over the last couple of weeks, we've seen basis absolutely explode. And if anyone's watching July, August bean futures, July, November bean futures, those spreads continue to invert. So both stories, you're starting to see that sort of tightness that we've talked about all along with the bean complex, that maybe our crush demand and our export demand early on pulled a significant supply out of the eastern part of the Corn Belt down towards export. Now the domestic crusher, with crush margins as good as they've been, is really trying to hunt for beans, and to a point where basis levels have traded triple digits over the July contract at on top of the inverse. I don't know how long that lasts. So my recommendation for producers today would be certainly maybe not necessarily selling the cash beans, but I think taking advantage of these very aggressive bean basis levels and moving them, and then you could leave the board side open for the time being, given how tight things are, and protect yourself against that inverse. When it comes to new crop, I think if it all depends on how the acreage report shifts out. I think obviously everybody's, it's not an unknown thing of North Dakota and Minnesota's lack of progress in being past the prevent plant date for corn in those areas of May 25th. There's some debate on acreage, and I think you could see some switching. I think, you know, some people have talked about more corn acres, some have talked about more beans. I think the acreage pie, which the last 3, 4, 5 years for corn and soybeans been around 180 million, could be somewhere light of that by 1 million or 2 million acres. So you can plug and play, you know, corn or beans, and which gets potentially more, or actually more planted. But I do think that there's some significant issues of getting everything planted, which you can't afford to miss out on acres. So that's why I'm a little more patient on new crop, even with the big break we've seen the first end of last, beginning of this week, at the end of the month of May, and certainly the last few days of, or the first few days of June, of being a little patient. Things do look good. You know, I think from a stand standpoint, corn and beans, both of what's planted, looks awfully good. So that's the opposite side of the coin to maybe think about defending. But I think there's a lot more unknown to keep us a little patient on new crop sales here for at least until the end of the month.
So you are of an idea, even at this high price, demand will remain good, and that. So that it is a supply issue?
Yeah, I think from an acreage standpoint, it could be. I mean, that upper Northwest, certainly there's no guarantee that all those acres get planted. Maybe a lot of them go to beans, but there's certainly going to be some prevent plants, maybe higher than what we've seen the last couple of years. And that keeps a floor under the market. I mean, obviously the concern is December corn traded below $7 yesterday, and I think we have to be mindful of that in trying to protect at least $7. But I think until we get to the acreage report, there's a lot of unknown and certainly a lot of growing season ahead of us. Now, if you've not done anything today, then certainly I would consider making a few new crop sales. But most growers, I think, have scaled up sell and are probably in the quarter to a third sold. And if they're there, I think they've got some time to be a little patient on new crop.
What other things have you been watching closely?
I think, you know, obviously the war and the impact. I mean, some of the break we've seen over the last week has been tied to, will Russia and the EU work something out with the Ukraine to allow exports? I think that has a potential downside impact, something we need to pay attention. But that is something we want to watch closely. I think, you know, movement of beans out of South America, we need them to supplement some of this export demand to transition us to new crop. I think obviously crop development is another. Things are off to a really good start, but I think certainly we have to pay attention here as we move forward to precipitation, and certainly the acreage report's a biggie here coming up at the end of the month on June 30th that will be a big driver here as we head towards pollination in July.
The Andersons, Marathon Oil, are not concerned that ethanol usage will be down?
You know, it feels like today, surprisingly enough, driving demand has not seen a downtick. Now, maybe as we get deeper into the summer, that happens. But I think, you know, from ethanol demand perspective, it's really tied to the consumer and how much they're willing to get out after a couple of years of being maybe less travel because of COVID. Will they want to get out and take those family vacations through the summer? And so far, we've seen people willing to spend that money, but there's certainly risk. The higher fuel price goes above $5, some people even talk $6, if that gets to that point, certainly will have some impact on driving demand. We have not seen us or our peers seen that happen yet. And I think obviously going forward, that's a good thing for the corn demand sector.
You may listen to the whole of Commodity Week on our website at willag.org or find it as a podcast in your favorite podcast applications. Online again, willag.org. Our thanks to our panelists this week, including Jim McCormick of agmarket.net out of Barrington, Illinois, Ellen Dearden from AgReview in Morton, Illinois, and Brian Stark of the Andersons in Mansfield, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.